Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03, midweek, Wednesday afternoon, August 7th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. The combination of streamers Disney Plus, Hulu, and ESPN Plus proving to be a success. We'll cover that in our next segment. But right now, on this Personal Finance Wednesday, Americans are carrying a record load of credit card debt and having a tough time digging out from it. Joining us now on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Ted Rossman, Senior Industry Analyst, Bankrate.com in New York. Ted, thank you for joining us today. And let's go back to about 4 years ago when the first round of government stimulus checks came out during the COVID-19 pandemic, and the statistics were pretty startling. The number of Americans who used that stimulus funding to pay down their credit card debt, and it seems like we've run up that tab once again.
Yes, there was a time that credit card balances fell sharply. From the fourth quarter of 2019 to the first quarter of 2021, balances fell 17%, according to the New York Fed. And that was pretty staggering. And as you said, a lot of it was because of stimulus and people spending less for a while. Since then, the trend has very much reversed. Since the beginning of 2021, credit card balances are up 48%. The New York Fed told us yesterday that these balances are now at an all-time record high. Interest rates are very close to record highs on credit cards. So it's been a tough combination for a lot of people.
And that's the big thing. If you are carrying a credit card balance, then you are financing this debt at an interest rate well into the 20s.
The average is 20.73%, but a lot of people are paying more than that, especially on store cards. Many store credit cards are north of 30%. And even on regular old bank cards, if you have a lower credit score, you could easily be paying 25 or 30%. This is really high cost debt. It's sort of gone from bad to worse. You know, when the Fed started raising rates in early 2022, the average credit card rate was about 16%. Now it's about 21%.
We're talking about credit card debt and how you can pay it down with Ted Rossman, Senior Industry Analyst, Bankrate.com in New York. And I'm sure the people who are carrying balances on their credit card, you know, they come from all types from all across the economic spectrum. But who is the average person who is carrying credit card debt these days?
We actually see the worst burden among Gen Xers. They're living those expensive sandwich years where they are still taking care of their own kids, maybe helping to put them through college, still paying off the mortgage, maybe helping elderly parents as well, and maybe seeing the finish line of their own careers in sight and feeling undersaved for retirement. All of these expenses add up to a tough credit card debt burden for Gen Xers. Not that Gen Zers and millennials are immune. I mean, they're quickly catching up to some of this. We generally see credit card debt rise up until about age 60. And then boomers are feeling better by comparison.
And then very quickly, we've talked about a number of solutions in previous segments, zero balance transfer credit cards, and then just using that particular card to knock down your debt, personal loans. But you've touched on credit counseling, and we've never really gone in depth on it. What is credit counseling and how does it work?
We're talking about agencies like Money Management International and GreenPath. What they do is they negotiate these debt management plans. Common terms are something like a 7 or 8% interest rate over 4 or 5 years. And banks are willing to play along with this because it's been proven to work. And frankly, they'd rather get some of your money than none of it. But this can actually be a really beneficial technique. What banks are worried about is people skipping out and not paying them back at all. I'm not a fan of the for-profit debt counseling approach. That can have a lot of fees, a lot of credit score damage. Nonprofit credit counseling, by contrast, is low fee. It can help your credit over time. They're going to work with you to pay it all back, but you're going to pay it back at more favorable terms.
Ted Rossman, Senior Industry Analyst, Bankrate.com in New York. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up, Disney has a hit on its hands with its combined streaming services. We'll talk about that next.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Disney is seeing a welcome shift involving its streaming services. Let's take a closer look with Matt Shapiro, President, NWS Capital in Chicago. Matt, thank you for joining us today. The Disney reporting its second quarter earnings, and for the first time, it is seeing a profit from its streaming business, making $47 million in the last quarter and an improvement from losing $512 million in the same quarter a year ago. So is it safe to say that Disney has finally turned the corner on streaming?
Yeah, a really upbeat report overall, with especially the streaming, which has been the big focus for investors. Now, the stock is down some today, and, you know, the stock has not been doing great lately because of the, you know, ABC, linear, regular television not doing so great, streaming not doing well, but finally turning the corner a little bit. But there is softness in some parts of the Disney business, especially theme parks, with cautious consumers, which is a major driver of their overall profitability. But, you know, if you were going to start looking at Disney after all the ups and downs and the new CEO, Bob Iger, you know, it is a very complicated conglomerate, but its valuation PE ratio right now looking forward is about 15 or 16. So it is really a stock you could take a look at these levels.
And when it comes to like various sectors of the Disney company, what we're seeing in the second quarter report for 2024 is almost an about face. We flipped the script from previous quarterly reports where the theme park business was doing very well and it was subsidizing almost their streaming losses.
Right. And, you know, so it, you could spend literally, you know, we were looking at the report all morning. You can spend 2 days looking at the report. It's complicated. And that is part of the problem. It's a big entertainment conglomerate competing with Netflix, which is a pure play. They don't have all the legacy issues. Theme parks, a major business. You know, Disney has 225,000 employees. It's just a big, complicated business. TV actually does well, but it's sort of a legacy slow declining, even though it's a big cash cow. ESPN Sports has did amazing. Inside Out 2, the big movie, did great. Cruise ships doing well, but cautious consumer spending at the theme parks, which is a big driver of their overall profitability, of course, is one of the big concerns, I think, today for investors.
We're going inside the House of Mouse, looking at the Disney second quarter earnings report with Matt Shapiro, President, MWS Capital in Chicago. On the streaming front, Disney did say that the a price hike is coming for subscribers to Disney Plus, ESPN Plus, and Hulu. So if you have that bundle subscription, get ready to pay more. Now, when they've made the turn into profitability, this $47 million profit in the second quarter, is this a result of subscriptions? Is this from commanding higher rates on advertising? Or is it just slashing costs of content creation? Because it wasn't too long ago when Disney said they were going to spend well over $1 billion creating a new Star Wars series on a monthly basis.
Well, a lot of the losses were actually just write-downs. They burned through $11 billion getting the streaming business going. And the average revenue per user is, I think I'm looking at the report, about $7. So it's, the subscriptions are very modest. So it's taken a lot to get that going. They're cracking down on passwords. They are raising prices. I don't think people are really that sensitive between $7 and $9. And that has a major impact. So I feel like they've really, it's almost like competing against Tesla. So they're competing against Netflix. So I feel like they've finally gotten to the point where streaming is making progress. That is really the big takeaway. The negative for investors, at least today with the stock being down a little bit right now, is the theme parks. But, you know, great businesses like the theme park businesses, you know, there's ebbs and flows to consumer demand. That's part of the game. It doesn't mean it's a bad business. So I think it's really a great time to look at the company being down. I mean, this stock was as high as 200. Okay, maybe that was pandemic peaks. It was as high as 125 this year.
you know, they just raised their earnings estimates and guidance. I think it's really, you know, for us, I think the worst is probably behind the company.
Matt Shapiro, President, MWS Capital in Chicago, thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, mortgage rates are down and refis are up.
Money conversation that pays a big dividend. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Mortgage rates are at their lowest level since May of last year, and that's stimulating the market. Let's check in with Brian Wickert, President and owner, Accudent Mortgage in Waukesha, Wisconsin. Brian, thank you for joining us today. And this affects two tiers of homeowners and potential home buyers. If you're a home buyer and you've been waiting for rates to go down to finally take the plunge into the market, this is probably pushing a lot of people off of the sidelines.
I would agree. And in fact, on a median-priced home in the Chicago metro area, which is $375,000, if you're putting 25% down and you compare that 7.5% rate that we had earlier this year to the current 6.5%, your payment's $188 lower.
Now, when it comes to lower rates and lower payments, at what point, if you bought a home and you were in that 7% range, when does it make sense? You know, given all the time that goes through the refi process, going through underwriting, getting all your documents together, at what point when rates come down, when does that make sense for you to actually take advantage of those savings?
My rule of thumb is that if I can save somebody at least $100 a month and they can recoup their loan cost of doing the refinance in a year or less, that's bingo time. Now, it's all about understanding, though, the difference between what am I spending to do the refi? Now, those are called loan costs. And that's completely different than what you're bringing to the closing table. Because a lot of times lenders will roll your closing costs into your new loan balance. You end up with a higher loan amount. So you're thinking, hey, I didn't spend anything. Well, wait a minute. Look at the disclosures or the worksheets, and you really got to understand exactly what I'm paying. The good news is that in Chicago area, it only costs the hard cost, the appraisal, the credit report, title insurance, and closing is only about $1,650. So that's low compared to a lot of other parts of the country. If we can get by with an appraisal waiver, which we get about half of the time, that knocks off another $450, so you're down to $1,200.
With mortgage rates in the 6% range now, what is this going to do in terms of unlocking the housing market? Because you had a lot of people who didn't want to go in, and you also had a lot of people who didn't want to give up those very low rates they locked in during COVID. So what are we going to see now as far as the housing market is concerned?
I'm sorry to report that, first of all, the going rate for a 30-year fixed rate is about 6.5. It's not all the way down to 6. We've had a little bit of a bounce back since Friday's low point, just like the stock market, you know, came back a little bit. So we're at about 6.5, and I'm afraid it's not going to do a heck of a lot because, you know, you're still comparing your to a 3% rate. That's still a big push. Yet, every little bit helps. And I think we've got to get down to a rate that starts with a 5, the number 5, before we really start to see some people willing to list their home. But believe me, there's opportunity. I just did a little example on that same $280,000 loan amount. We could do a 6.99 rate, and that would save you $100 a month with no loan cost. That's what we call an official refi no-brainer. It's all about the loan amount, how much you're paying, and you know that change in interest rate that you're going to experience.
Brian Wickert, President and Owner, Accudent Mortgage, Waukesha, Wisconsin, thank you for joining us today. Still ahead in Personal Finance Wednesday, strategies to deal with the skyrocketing cost of college.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Police in a Chicago suburb investigate a series of shootings. A teenager is missing after disappearing in Lake Michigan off the shores of Northwest Indiana. In Personal Finance Wednesday, examining ways to conquer the challenge of paying for college. McDonald's looks to the past in an effort to drive future sales. WBBM Business, the markets are higher. The Dow up 50. 15 points. NASDAQ up 28. The S&P 500 is up 14. AccuWeather says for the rest of today, breezy and a bit warmer with sunshine and a few clouds. A high of 79. We have 76 degrees right now in Chicago under mostly sunny skies at 12:31. Topping our news at the half hour, the city of Evanston increasing patrols today after three shootings in a less than 24-hour period ending yesterday afternoon. Four people were wounded in the attacks. Evanston Police Commander Ryan Glue telling CBS News Chicago.
It's extreme when somebody is shooting in public, even if they are, even if it's not a random act. It's extremely, extremely concerning.
The first incident happened Monday night near Dempster and Dewey, then another one yesterday afternoon in the same area. That was followed by a third roughly a half hour later near Church and Dodge. Dangerous conditions are making it tough on crews looking to recover the body of a teenager missing in Lake Michigan near Beverly Shores, Indiana. State conservation officers say the 17-year-old from Minnesota was reported missing yesterday afternoon. Three other people were treated after struggling in the water. A beach hazard statement was in effect at the time. It's 12:32 as the noon business hour continues. The markets are higher once again. Joining us on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services and publisher of the Dow Theory Forecast Newsletter. Chuck, thank you for joining us today. And there was a little bit of a hiccup in the three major indices not too long ago, but that positive trend has returned.
Well, it has, although it is a little disconcerting that the market today has lost a lot of the mojo that it had earlier today. And we saw the same thing kind of yesterday afternoon where the indices were up big. They still finished up nicely, but they were well off their highs. And today we're seeing kind of a similar thing. And that's kind of what you see in a market here that's just quite honestly trying to figure out the direction it wants to go and how serious were those declines on Friday and Monday in terms of were they really significant pivots in the major trend, or were they just kind of blips on it?
Now, on Friday and Monday, people were there were some eye-popping figures about the degree to which markets were selling off. I mean, on a percentage basis, though, it was not nearly as bad. But when you say the Dow's down 1,000 points, you don't have to necessarily be in the business to know that that's quite a bit of value that was going away on a one day basis. But something we've talked about on Friday and Monday, Chuck, is that if you've been listening to this show and the analysis from a lot of people, yourself included, this is not necessarily a surprise. You said that there were some things lurking, especially on the Dow transport side of the equation, that maybe a downturn was coming.
Well, yes, they had not been behaving all that well, although I will say that they have been able to hold their recent lows, and that's one of the reasons that their little bit of their resilience here is one of the reasons why I think that the talk of the economy kind of exploding in a bad way and going into recession might be a bit premature. I mean, if you see the Dow Jones Transportation Average, which we've discussed is really an economically sensitive index, start, you know, going significantly below 15,000 and below, say, 14,700, I worry then about the economy. But if that can be fairly resilient here as it has been, I'm less concerned about that. And I think that's good for the overall market. Again, if people are looking for kind of the canary in the coal mine in terms of if the downward trends we saw on Friday and Monday are the beginning of something significant, you know, you can watch all the averages you want, but the Dow Jones Transportation Average is probably going to give you the biggest tell on that.
And on top of that, the VIX, the fear gauge, they've backed off from the record highs that we saw on Monday, because the VIX was clocking in at some figures that we saw during COVID or the Great Recession, and a lot of analysts said that was probably uncalled for.
Yeah, what we have, I think, the biggest spike in the VIX ever, one day spike, and then it basically yesterday came almost right back down. So, these are markets that tend to be pretty concerning to investors, and rightly so. But the thing to keep in mind is secondary corrections within bull markets, which I think that's what this is, serve a major purpose. And that major purpose is to scare the heck out of investors and to take some of the froth out of the market that builds up during the bullish move. And They tend to be very violent, but they tend to be very brief. And I think that's what we're in right now, quite frankly.
And then very quickly, Chuck, what's the Dow theory telling us, and what should we look out for?
Primary trend is still bullish under the Dow theory. So, you know, at least at this point, this is, you know, I hate to use the word garden variety, but really when you look at the points and you look at the percentages, this is nothing atypical when it comes to a pullback within a bull market. So, you know, investors should consider that and have some confidence in here to put some money to work in some of these stocks that have pulled back.
Chuck Carlson, CEO of Horizon Investment Services, publisher of the Dow Theory Forecast newsletter. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Personal Finance Wednesday, and education in ways to pay for college.
An economy of words. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday. Families sending a student to college, or more than one, face what can be overwhelming costs. Let's discuss ways to deal with the expense. We welcome in Chris Everett, fiduciary financial planner and president of Everett Wealth Solutions in Forest Park, author of the book, The Prescription for a Healthy Retirement. Chris, thank you for joining us today. And the cost of college has been, it's a hot topic. You can talk about it in the backyard over a backyard barbecue, because you've got parents who are sending kids to college or have kids who are high school aged. It's also a main policy driver with the numerous plans to forgive student loan debt. So you hear all of these stories and you might be very intimidated as a parent about how do we make college work for our kids?
You know, one of the best tools that we use in our practice to help reduce the cost of college may surprise you. It's called a Berkman analysis. And what this does is helps the student to know where in life they will be fit to flourish. You know, it's one thing to take these robotic tools that are out there and try to get a sense of where you should be. But because this tool really goes deep and helps to understand the whys of why you'll flourish somewhere, and we wrap a consultant around it, it makes for such an emotional breakthrough for students, because now all of a sudden they see why they wanted to go in that direction if they knew. Some, of course, don't know. Now they have new language for why these particular careers would be a best fit for them. You can actually see light bulbs going off over their heads, even the parents' heads, who now have new language about why their student should perhaps go in this particular direction. The emotional cost of not knowing where you should go to school, particularly college, is a lot higher than most people count. So while I know you're focused on the financial cost, there's also the emotional cost of going to the wrong school for the wrong reason.
And you bring up a very good point, and that is if we look at the cost of college as an investment, and you have a general idea of what you want to do, I want to be a lawyer, I want to go into business, then maybe you can shave a couple of, you know, thousand or tens of thousands of dollars off of your tuition cost by, instead of going to the big name on the East Coast that's prestigious, and just stay in Chicago or in the Midwest and take advantage of the local ecosystem that comes from going to a school closer to home that may have a lower price tag.
And we've had a lot of parents in the last couple of years, because of the increased cost, encourage their students to go to the junior colleges that are in their area because the cost is so much lower. Then, of course, once you transfer, assuming you've done a good job in your selection at the junior college, most of it can transfer. And then it's where you end up graduating that really makes the difference anyway.
If you want to, I was a very different case, because I always knew what I wanted to do. Like, even in high school, Chris, I had the jacket, the tie, and the microphone. I wanted to be a broadcaster. But there are a lot of people who go through college and even 4 years later are still trying to find themselves. And 22 years ago, that might have been an expense worth bearing. But you bring up a very good point. If you want to find yourself, maybe you do that locally and then transfer to a place when you finally figure it out.
And certainly take the Berkman assessment. Huge, huge deal for everyone, for the students, rather. I mean, it reduces the cost, because now you know you're going to the right school and you're selecting the right course structure. It makes you, and you're going to graduate in 4 years instead of 5, 6, or 7.
Chris Everett, fiduciary financial planner and president of Everett Wealth Solutions in Forest Park and author of the book, The Prescription for a Healthy Retirement. Thank you for joining us today. Join us at this time tomorrow for Technology Thursday. And still to come, a fast food chain goes retro with a new meal deal.
Conversation that's on the money. You're listening to the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
McDonald's is putting its faith in nostalgia in an effort to drive slipping sales. Let's get the details from RJ Hadavi, head of analytical research at the foot traffic analysis firm Placer AI in Palo Alto, California. RJ, thank you for joining us today. And I know what it's like to be a baby boomer now, RJ, because finally, all of business and culture is catering to me, the 44-year-old adult consumer.
Yeah, you're exactly right, and I feel you in the same boat here. McDonald's obviously trying to make a play on nostalgia. They'll be introducing exclusive nostalgia-themed products, a lot of it invoking some of the themes of past Happy Meals in a promotion starting on August 13th. As you pointed out, the company's seen a bit of pressure this year in terms of sales, potentially losing share to value grocery convenience stores and hoping to recapture some of the magic they've had with past promotions. The adult Happy Meal that we saw back in 2022 was one of the more successful promotions that we saw in the quick service space in several years to that point, and try to recapture that with some of the other other promotions as well, kind of honing on nostalgia. And so this is just the latest in an attempt to capitalize on that.
And McDonald's has been on a bit of a heater, as you mentioned. The adult Happy Meals were a big success when released nearly 2 years ago. The collectibles are quickly landing on eBay and other online marketplaces. Of course, the Grimace Shake was a huge success last year, and a success above and beyond what McDonald's was imagining, based on my conversations with people who work at McDonald's corporate here in Chicago. I mean, that kind of went into strange places they weren't really anticipating. But when you're in the world of marketing, a win's a win.
Exactly. And I think it's not just nostalgia here, too. I think they're going to capitalize on kind of the exclusivity of the product, too. As you pointed out, a lot of the previous adult Happy Meal products ended up on eBay. And I think that's a big part of it, too. It's not just the fact that it's nostalgia. These are limited time offers, and they will be in demand. And I think that that's part of it as well, is keeping some of the exclusivity and uniqueness of it. And that's really one of those things that's driving visits. It's not just value pricing or nostalgia. It's kind of the, I get this, and I've got a story to tell of this. It's kind of one of the key things that we're seeing across not just restaurants, but really the consumer space in general.
And here's a trivia question or a piece of trivia that you can use to amaze your friends. And that was the first movie tie-in for a McDonald's Happy Meal was the first Star Trek movie in 1979. And McDonald's is going into the intellectual property well with some of the adult Happy Meal cups, Barbie, Hot Wheels, Beanie Babies, Hello Kitty, Jurassic Park, Minions. So they have to get in touch with some of these studios to use their registered trademark in their adult Happy Meals.
Yeah, they do. They do. And I think it is kind of a greatest hit of what we've seen in the Happy Meals over the last several decades. But I think the studios and the other IP and intellectual property holders here are probably equally as glad to participate in this, especially if it drives interest in their various brands. So I think it's going to be a win-win for a lot of those partnerships.
And this is also a breakfast, lunch, and dinner play. You also get a sausage McMuffin with egg sandwich along with brown and hot coffee to go on your retro adult Happy Meal. Maybe they'll just bring back those aluminum ashtrays too. You don't have to smoke. You just have to look at them, and it'll take you back to a different time and place.
I don't know if that's going to be on the future product pipeline, but this is going to be interesting to watch to see if they kind of have the same success that they had the last promotion, or if the nostalgia play is starting to die out. I expect this to be a pretty popular promotion, though.
RJ Hadavi, head of analytical research at the foot traffic analysis firm Placer AI, thank you for joining us today. If you missed any part of today's show, just go to our stream, skip back to the time you want. There's a pause and rewind function that works both online and with the Odyssey app.